Thank you everyone for coming. Wednesday 8:30 is not the optimal spot for, but I really appreciate it. And I also wanted to put in a plug. I am the program chair for the disability section, and I do a lot of my work has involved women's health issues, reproductive, maternal health, violence, and I am my secondary membership is with MCH, and I'm actually looking forward to being involved in your collaborative. So we can talk later. So if you're interested in disability issues, please, you know, feel free to become a secondary member, or just, you know, attend sessions and let's start a cross collaboration. I mean, membership can be secondary. Having said that, so my presentation today is on oral health during pregnancy among women with disabilities, and I do want to thank my co-authors Karen Clemens and Ying Zhang for their contribution. We have no disclosures, which is a very odd statement, but anyway. So the purpose today is really to compare oral health and pregnancy outcomes among women with and without disabilities, and to really see what are the associations between oral health and what are the, you know, what's the disability-related disparities in oral health care and oral health problems between women with and without disabilities. But I want to present this in a larger context. I want to present it in terms of also to let you know and to for you to understand the maternal characteristics and the birth outcomes between women with and without disabilities. Are there disparities? I mean, first of all, who are these women? You know, because there's very little, if you look at the literature, if you do a PubMed search, there's very, very little out there to let you know who are these women who are, we have a disability and who are becoming pregnant and bearing children. And secondly, what are their pregnancy complications? What are their birth outcomes? What are their healthcare experiences? So I want to present that in a larger context. And I also want to let you know the study that we're on oral health, the findings are very preliminary. And we hope as we get more data to do some more rigorous analysis. So as I said before, you know, very little is known about oral health among pregnant women with disabilities. But what we do know, and this is through, you know, systematically we have been researching in at UMass, we're looking at who are these women with disabilities who have been giving birth. And but as I said, there's very little known. There are pockets of studies that have been done in other countries, as usual in Sweden and England and Australia and New Zealand. And so when we embarked on this literature and we embarked on this study, we found that very, very little has been done. However, fortunately, over the last couple of years, there's more and more information that's coming out there. So, and as I said, this is a systematic investigation because this is part of an NIH grant that we've received, which is looking at both the health needs, the unmet health needs, as well as the barriers to care for women with and without physical disabilities. I probably don't need to tell you about much about PRAMS, but let me do so just in case some of you are not aware. It's the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System, and we've used data from 2009. We've aggregated data for 3 years, from 2009 to 2011. And this is primarily because of sample size issues that we had to aggregate the data. So it is a population-based survey of recently pregnant women. It collects state-specific data on the maternal attitudes and experiences of women during pregnancy, and these are only women who have given a live birth. It's a survey that is conducted in 40 states as well as in New York City, and it also it links birth certificate data with self-reported data. And women are interviewed 2 to 6 months postpartum, and they select to receive 3 male surveys, and the non-responders are followed up by a telephone survey. For our sample here, as I said, we had to aggregate for 3 years, 2009 to 2011. So for our sample here, we have 287 women with disabilities and 3,440 women without disabilities. As you can see, again, the sample size is very, is low. How is disability identified in this survey? So it's identified by one question, which is, are you limited in any way in any activities because of a physical, mental, or emotional problem? And this is a question which was developed by the CDC in the, I'd say, around 1990, and was used in the core BRFSS survey since 1996. The definition is consistent with Healthy People 2010 and also 2020. And only two surveys, so there's 40 surveys plus New York City that have PRAMs, but only two states include disability screeners. And that too, there's obviously state added. And that's Massachusetts and Rhode Island. For this particular analysis, I've only included the Rhode Island survey, just because they have a more robust robust set of oral health questions. But for a lot of the other analysis that I've done, I've actually used both states, data from both states, and get a richer sample size. And I'll just go into the issues about the inclusion of disability screeners and PRAMs later. It's one of my pet peeves. So what are the measures we've included is age, race, ethnicity, marital status, education, parity, and household poverty levels. For oral health, these are the questions that are in the Rhode Island PRAMs, is having teeth cleaned prior to pregnancy, visited a dentist prior to pregnancy, having a dental problem during pregnancy, and talked about dental care with their provider during pregnancy. And we've also looked at a select set of birth outcomes here, is preterm delivery, low birth weight, 6 or more days in the hospital, and infant in ICU at birth. Just to let you know, that some of these questions are from the self-reported survey, actually, and some of these are from the birth certificate. Again, just to describe who are these women. So mothers who identify self-report to have a disability, they're younger. 14.6% are under the age of 20, compared to 7.5% of non-disabled women. They're less educated. 45% or more have high school level of education compared to 60% of high school level of education compared to 60% of non-disabled women. They're less likely to be married. 36.7% report are not being married, compared to almost 60% of women without disabilities. And they're more likely to be below federal poverty level, 45% compared to 24.9%. They're also more likely to be on public insurance. It's just not reported here. We also looked at some health behaviors and healthcare utilization. One of the things is that women with disabilities were twice as likely to smoke during their last trimester, but not drink. And 21.7% of women reported smoking in their last trimester, compared to 10.5% of non-disabled women. And this is, we've published this analysis, actually, 2 years ago in the Maternal and Child Health Journal. And what we found was interesting is that women with disabilities were more likely to smoke before their pregnancy, during the last trimester, as well as at postpartum, compared to non-disabled women. What was also more interesting and disturbing is that they were also the cohort of women who smoked throughout. You know, the sort of the hardest score smokers who continuously smoke before, during, and after pregnancy, compared to non-disabled women. They were also more likely to report stressful life events, you know, on the SLE domains that are in the current phase of the PRAMS, and 51% reported 3 or more stressful life events, compared to 26.3% of non-disabled women. We looked at this analysis. We didn't find any association between having stressful life events and birth outcomes, but what we did find were women were significantly more likely to, women with disabilities, to report these in all of the 4 domains of stressful life events. As I had mentioned before, one of my interests is on violence and abuse among men and women with disabilities. And what we found was also that they were more likely to report physical abuse by a current or former partner compared to non-disabled women. So 7% of women with disabilities in this time period reported a physical abuse by a current or former partner, compared to 2.3% of non-disabled women. What was, and this is actually a part of another publication, I think last year, where we looked at physical abuse, disability-related disparities in physical abuse among pregnant women, and we also found that women with disabilities were more likely to report physical abuse before pregnancy as well as during pregnancy compared to non-disabled women. There were no questions about postpartum abuse, and there's no other kind of more in-depth questions about the type of abuse or, I mean, it is physical abuse or any of the contextual factors, but we did find that these rates were significantly higher. Also interesting was that we looked at the Karlochuk Index, the Adequacy of Prenatal Care Index, and looked at differences between women with and without disabilities. And we found that almost 9% of women with disabilities reported inadequate prenatal care compared to 5.5% of women without disabilities. In a separate analysis, I mean, this is really interesting because there has been no work on looking at the adequacy of prenatal care or quality of prenatal care, you know, when their visits are being initiated for women with disabilities. So this is really a very interesting finding. In a separate analysis that I've looked at is women with intellectual and developmental disabilities specifically. And what we found that women with IDD were reporting, well, they weren't reporting because this is a birth certificate, well, but they were getting prenatal care later, so not in their first trimester, but once they got into the system, they were getting more intense prenatal care, so, you know, in terms of the plus, but they were actually receiving prenatal care later in their pregnancy compared to non-disabled women. So we also looked at some other health behaviors and healthcare utilization. For example, we found that they were less likely to breastfeed, 70% compared to 75%. They also were less likely to be currently breastfeeding at the time of the survey, 45% to almost 53%, and report less social support in all of the domains. And finally, they also were less likely to visit a doctor for a postpartum checkup, 87% compared to 93%, which actually goes as similar findings to yours, to the earlier presenter. We didn't find any differences, interestingly enough, in terms of healthcare visits in the first week for the infant, or infant testing for hearing loss or for genetic conditions, and for access to a healthcare worker. They said that they had access and they were and there were no differences. So here are our preliminary findings in terms of oral health care before and during a pregnancy between women with and without disabilities. For the first part, when, you know, in terms of getting their teeth cleaned prior to pregnancy, 53% of women with disabilities reported getting their teeth cleaned compared to 63.4% of women without disabilities. When we looked at visiting a dentist during their pregnancy, we found similar differences. 42% of women with disabilities compared to 53% of women without disabilities. And for both of these indicators, the differences were significant. When we looked at talking to a dental about dental care with a provider during their pregnancy, we did not find any significant differences. However, fewer women reported compared to those without disabilities. When we looked at having a dental problem during their pregnancy, again we found very significant differences, where 23.6% of women with disabilities reported having a dental problem compared to 16.5% of those without disabilities. Finally, we just looked at birth outcomes of women with live births by disability status and dental problem. And these are bivariate analysis, and our next step of the analysis, we will control for some of the demographics and other characteristics that I had referred to earlier. But what we found was in terms of low birth weight, there were significant differences. So women with disabilities who had reported having an oral health problem during their pregnancy were more likely to have low birth weight babies compared to those without. In terms of preterm birth, we did not find these differences. The differences were not significant. However, again, it's, you know, it's 18% of women compared to 8.9% of non-disabled women. So there were differences. The differences were not significant. And this is, we think, is primarily due to the fact that we have a very small sample size. And hopefully, when we get 2012 data, we will get, you know, we'll be able to get a larger sample of women. And when we looked at cesarean sections, there were no differences. It's 31% of women with disabilities compared to 32.8% of women without disabilities. When we looked at the number of days of hospitalization after pregnancy, we found differences, but they were not significant. 11.9 compared to 7.8% of non-disabled women. When we looked at whether the infant was at ICU at birth, again, we found differences, but they were not significant. And it was actually reversed. 8.9% of women with disabilities compared to 10.2% of women without disabilities. So what does this say? I mean, first of all, this is really the first, and even for us, a preliminary look at the sort of the rates of oral health and dental issues among women with and without disabilities. What we found is that, yes, women do have poorer oral health and less access, and there are associations between the oral health access and problems with their birth outcomes. And definitely more work needs to be done. But what this picture that it paints is actually very similar to the general population of women with disabilities. When we look at women with disabilities using other data, like, for example, the BRFSS, we found that women with disabilities had less access to a dental care provider. They were less likely to have gone to a dental provider in the last year, as well as they were more likely to have six or more teeth removed compared to those without disabilities. And also in our other work that we've interviewed women with actually both men and women with disabilities, have been on Medicaid, and what we found, interestingly enough, is that one of the biggest issues for people with disabilities is dental care access. You know, we've interviewed women across, people with disabilities across the state, people who are on Medicaid, and we found that one of the biggest issues was access to dental care. And this is, you know, clearly reflected in this data. There are obviously, you know, major issues in terms of the PRAMS methodology. It's a self-reported data. It's subject to self-report bias. And the larger issue, I think, for this particular study is the number of women who report having a disability. And we hope, you know, as we get more years of data, we'll be able to correct for that. The other issue is in terms of who are these women with disabilities? You know, it's kind of a catch-all question on disability that's included in the PRAMS. But, you know, sort of we need more refined analysis looking at mental, physical, cognitive, and sensory disabilities to see, you know, are there differential risks for this population? But unfortunately, what we're limited with is the question that's available. And, of course, this is a cross-sectional design, so we're limited, you know, based on those limitations. So the sort of where do we go from here? I mean, we definitely would want to look at, you know, more years of data. But the other issue is also we're linking to hospital discharge data and looking at healthcare utilization, and linking it to PRAMS. So there is a system in Massachusetts, it's the Pell data system, and we want to look at, we want to look at the analysis with these linked data set. But I think the issue here is, and I'm hoping some of you are from PRAMS coordinators or work with you or in PRAMS advisory committees, is the issue is that there's very little we can actually analyze. Because think about this, 40 states and only 2 states have a disability question and only 1 question. The Section 4302 of the Affordable Care Act, you know, which is the section which actually mandates race ethnicity questions as well as disability questions in all federally funded health surveys. And they recommend a set of 6 disability questions. They mandate a set of 6 disability questions Which are included in the American Community Survey. It's included in NHIS. It's included in the BRFSS. In the HUD surveys, it is in NHANES. However, PRAMS, I am part of the Massachusetts Advisory Committee. I'm looking at the Phase 8 questions. Does not include the 6 questions, and I don't understand why. It's a federal mandate, and the CDC does not recommend the use of these, or actually include these 6 questions in the core of the PRAM surveys. And until we have those questions, we cannot look at, disability, different types of disability, as well as a standardized measure across the different states, and to get a large enough sample size to look at these unmet needs and to look at the behaviors and the outcomes of this population. So I strongly recommend that if you guys have contacts, please do so we can get this. This is a very important area. And also in all the other work that we've been doing, including interviewing women with disabilities, physical disabilities, we found that there are just such almost egregious disparities between, you know, what they tell us about their interaction, where providers basically say, don't get pregnant, you know, terminate your baby. I could go on and on and on, and I'm hoping to present next year on this. And so that there is these disparities are there, and I think the inclusion of these questions should actually be mandated and should be done. So sorry to put on my other hat, but I think it's a very important issue. So. Should I answer questions right now?
Yeah.
Oh,
thank you.